This is Gridiron Graduates, a weekly podcast covering all things football.
Episode number 70, approaching terminal velocity. Recorded April 30th, 2017.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Bill Rossetti hitting you guys back up. Ian Wharton along with me for the ride. As always, Gridiron Graduates hitting you guys back up on our post-NFL draft edition here. It's crazy to think. We always talk about how excited we are and how fast the draft process goes leading up to it. And then here it is. It's already come and gone. 3 days just seem to fly like that. We're here to kind of wrap things up here. We'll discuss some of the teams, like some of the top teams, and then other teams we thought did pretty well. So just kind of a general sense of some teams, give our thoughts here. And then, of course, big week for us because we've also got Mark Schofield of Inside the Pylon coming to discuss quarterbacks. We're not going to get too in-depth on the quarterbacks here. We're going to save that for Mark to get you guys some real good input here. So really excited to get things going here. I'm sure Ian as well, very excited. What's going on, man? How was your weekend and watching draft and all that stuff?
It was really good. I was really kind of blown away by how quickly it seemed to go. I feel like every year maybe I say that, but man, this draft just seemed to fly by. And the three-day format, I'm still getting used to it a little bit because, you know, I remember when it was 2 days and it was just all day long, and I really like that format personally. I could see why teams probably like the new format a lot more, but I feel like I'm never going to fully adjust because, you know, the first round's over in like 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Second day is over in about the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. And then day three ended over an hour early, actually. It was scheduled to go till 7, and they actually were going so quickly that they caught up. So the picks were actually being announced live, so which is extremely uncommon, especially on day 3. Usually day 3, they're 4 or 5 picks behind, and they had fallen behind like that on day 2, but they picked it back up on day 3, and I hope that they can continue that actually in the future. Even though it makes the day shorter, it's still nice because at least that way you don't go to Twitter, because I don't really like to see picks tipped. I don't really like that. I actually like to, you know, get the drama, and I don't really check Twitter too much during the event. I just kind of tweet my thoughts, and then, you know, I may read my mentions a little bit, but I try to, you know, really enjoy the draft. But I really enjoyed it, man. It was super fun. There were, you know, a ton of trades throughout the entire event, and that makes it very unpredictable. And it was, like, outside of the first handful of picks, you know, we got to Tennessee and we started seeing some names that we probably didn't expect to go that high. So it was a great event.
Yeah, and that was one of my thoughts too with the draft, was day 3, how quickly it went, because I think it wasn't even like 7 o'clock, at least Eastern time, that it ended. And it's like, wow, normally this lasts till about 8 o'clock or so.
Yeah.
So it really sped up quick. I mean, part of it too was there wasn't as many picks as usual because of how many third round compensatory picks there were. And of course you had 3 less picks because of the teams that forfeited their picks, which I kind of don't like that. I think, forcing teams to lose picks, that's fine. You know, punishments, you know, that's no problem. But in a way you're also like kind of hurting the college kids too, because now that's 3 less players that will actually hear their name called on draft day. But then again, you also have the undrafted free agent pool, so they still have that. So I guess it all kind of balances out, but it's, you know, it's a give and take. But yeah, like you said, it was a really, really fun event. Thursday night round 1 certainly was very exciting. A lot of interesting things happened, to say the least, and we'll kind of get into that and kind of discuss some of the teams that we get in here. So we'll start right at the top. We'll start with Cleveland. You know, all the hoopla leading up to the draft, they were possibly going to take Mitch Trubisky. Some reporters even bit hard on that report big time, which kind of put a little bit of an egg in their face. I mean, it was, you know, some people, I saw pictures on Twitter or whatever, it was basically like the draft day movie, but instead you're using Myles Garrett's name. You know, Myles Garrett, no matter what, and that, in the end, that's what Cleveland did. Made the smart pick, made the right pick. And then really, as they continued on, Cleveland just kind of killed this draft. My concern was they didn't take a quarterback in round one, but obviously they took three really good players that are probably all going to come in and start day one, in Jabril Peppers, and then trading back up into round one to take David Njoku. Then they took their quarterback in DeShone Kizer. But overall, I thought the Browns did really good, and they took Larry I can never pronounce his name right. Ogunjobi, something like that.
Yeah.
Of Charlotte. Howard Wilson in the fourth round. Round five, they took Roderick Johnson. Caleb Brantley in round six, of course, was the really intriguing one because of the off-field stuff going on right now. And then they took Zane Gonzalez, the kicker out of Arizona State, who I saw at the Senior Bowl. And Matt Days, the NC State running back, also at the Senior Bowl, with the second-to-last pick. But overall, I thought Cleveland definitely one of the winners, especially with those top three picks and three very talented players that are all going to contribute from day one.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of what the Browns did, and I was a little uncertain about it when they had traded back up for David Njoku, and not from the sense that they didn't add good players. I mean, they did, obviously. Myles Garrett, highest rated grade I've ever given in the last, you know, 4 years of doing this. Pretty in-depth, especially the last 3 years, very in-depth. At 5 years total, we're, you know, about 2013 class, I did about 100 or so players. So I wasn't super in-depth, but I did a little bit. And there's no doubt about it, Myles Garrett was a highest graded player in that group, which is pretty impressive. It doesn't mean he'll be the best pro, but that's at least my expectation. He'll be out there with, like, Khalil Mack. That's, you know, I think he's a little bit better prospect than Mack. Now, whether he'll be a better player, I think he'll be about the same caliber, which is definitely an elite player. So, but, you know, Peppers, I think it's a good fit for them. I'm not terribly high on Peppers. I'm not as low as some others where some people think he was a running back. I think he could play running back, but I don't think he was a better running back prospect per se. I do think he'll be a nice box safety who maybe can develop and continue to get better. He obviously has the athleticism for it. Tremendous character from what we know. Very hard worker. And he was a favorite of the coaching staff there, and I think for good reason. And it kind of shows in his passion. I think he'll maximize his skill set. I think he'll really fit with Greg Williams as the defensive coordinator there. So I'm optimistic on his landing spot there. And David Njoku is a phenomenal talent at tight end. Great player after the catch. He's a little bit young and raw as far as his on-field experience, but he was definitely a first-round talent in this class. So to get him at 29 is great. I was a little bit worried, though, because when they traded back up, I thought, okay, they're trading back in for DeShone Kizer. They got their quarterback. And then they got Njoku, and I was like, oh, that's a concern to me because I didn't think Kizer would fall to them at 52. But they didn't get desperate. And Kizer, to me, was a first-round value. There are concerns with him. He has to develop. If he doesn't get better, I don't think he's going to be a good starting quarterback. And that's a concern. So, you know, he was that fringe first-round pick for me. Mm-hmm. Great tools. Just what he does well, it's very hard to find in the NFL. And you don't really find quarterbacks who have those skills as far as being able to extend plays, moving in the pocket confidently. You know, not many quarterbacks do that and then fail in the NFL. But he does need to improve his accuracy. He does need to improve how quickly he reads defenses. But I'm a big fan of taking him at 52. You know, if they can get him out on the field in 2017, that's great. It may help them decide what they need to do in 2018. And the nice thing is, being a second-round pick, they're not necessarily married to him. Mm-hmm. So say they get him in the building, and just personality-wise or maybe how he learns, it just doesn't work. And they have a chance to get a top quarterback next year. Kizer's not going to stop you from taking them. So just a great job for them by not reaching. I would have taken him at 29, so, you know, these guys are making good moves, and I give them a lot of credit for that, for sticking to their board and making wise decisions. Really, the rest of their draft is gravy at that point, and I think that they sort of treated it like that. They took a lot of, you know, kind of risks. I think very low floor risks, especially guys like Roderick Johnson. You know, he may never be anything. He may not last 2 or 3 years in the NFL, or he could be really good. Maybe he just totally changes his body in the NFL, and that happens for these young guys. They're 21, 22 years old. It's possible. And sometimes these projects don't, most of the time they don't work out, and sometimes they do. But that's kind of like people talk about analytics. To me, it's not really analytics. It's just getting more opportunities to hit. And that matters.
And, you know, one thing of note too, as kind of following up your point of maybe taking a quarterback next year, they're really in control of the 2018 draft right now because they've got 5 picks now in the first 2 rounds. 2 in the first and 3 now in the second. So they're really in a good position if they want to look at one of the quarterbacks in next year's draft, or if they're maybe looking at some veteran quarterback this year, which at this point I don't think that'll happen. I know there was a report, some say it was false, that they were looking to trade for Kirk Cousins. How true that was, I don't know. But having 5 picks now in 5 of basically the first 64 picks, even say 5 of the top, I don't know, 55, because we expect Houston should be a good team next season, probably will be get to the playoffs, maybe win a game. So let's say 5 of the top 55 picks in next year's draft still puts them in a really good position to kind of do what they want if they really like one of these quarterbacks next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with that.
Chicago then came at number 2. You know, that was one of the first surprises of the draft. I know I was really taken aback by it when they moved up to number 2 to take Mitch Trubisky. But I guess if they really wanted the guy, or maybe just San Francisco just kind of swindled them in a spectacular way. But Chicago moves up to number 2 to take Mitch Trubisky. They actually only ended up with 5 draft picks because, you know, trading a bunch of picks, including trading a third next year to San Francisco to move up. They took Adam Shaheen, tight end out of Ashland, with the 45th pick. Then in the 4th round, they took Eddie Jackson, the safety out of Alabama, and then Tariq Cohen, running back from North Carolina A&T. And then in round 5, they took a guy that I like, partly because he's from Kutztown, so kind of a small school local guy here in PA, Jordan Morgan. So I'm excited. I was excited to see Morgan get picked. And then on that note, Bucknell's Julian Davenport taken by the Texans in round 4. But overall, boy, for having a high pick, or starting with a high pick, Chicago, not sure what to think about this one. You know, having a small draft class and having so many needs, it's hard to feel pretty good about how Chicago came out of this.
Yeah, I'm with you here, and I think that we have to separate the trade that they made from the pick that they made at the top. They got taken advantage of. And I know Bears fans don't want to hear that, but they did. There may have been other offers on the table from other teams, but if there was a Godfather offer that would have given them multiple first-round picks and probably day 2 picks, kind of like we saw from the Rams and Eagles last year, they would have maybe taken it. But those offers were not good enough for the San Francisco 49ers to pass up the guy that they really wanted. And we knew that they wanted. Solomon Thomas was a name that had been kind of linked to them for a long time. And lo and behold, they moved down one spot to go get Solomon Thomas. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that tells me that Ryan Pace panicked. And he didn't survey the field well enough. He didn't, you know, he was in such a rush to go get his quarterback that he didn't stop and think and call their bluff a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And because of it, they were already short on picks, and then they gave up more mid-round picks. This is a roster that needs help. Mm-hmm. They didn't add any secondary help in this draft, not immediate secondary help. That's an issue. It's a huge issue when you look at their cornerback chart. So I'm concerned. Now, I like the pick of Trubisky. I like Trubisky's fit there. I think he's a good quarterback, and he will be at least an average quarterback in the NFL, and I think that there's upside to be better there. I don't think he's a guy that needs to sit, although he does have the luxury of sitting right away with Mike Glennon being there.
Yep.
I don't knock them for the decision to take Trubisky at all. I think that if you are convicted about your quarterback, it's fair to give up what you think you have to. I understand that mindset. I just think whenever you can save picks, you can. You have to do the best that you can, and if you can, then you do it. So, I just don't think that logically they looked at it and said, "Hey, we think that they're going to move down for Thomas. This is who they've been linked to. This is what's been rumored. This wasn't them trying to hide up taking Leonard Fournette or anybody like that. So we kind of knew what to expect. And I just think that John Lynch took advantage of their aggressiveness. But, you know, on the same hand, I know that they're excited that they got their quarterback. And if Trubisky ends up being an all-pro, it won't matter. But it could end up mattering if it costs this coaching staff and the GM their job. Because on defense, they didn't have enough resources allocated to the defensive backfield. If they're giving up 30 points a game and this team goes 3-13 next year, well, guess what? Those third and fourth round picks would have been nice because your backup quarterback wasn't able to beat out Mike Glennon, or if he just wasn't given the job, whatever it may be. And again, I don't think it's a talent issue for Trubisky, but it's just for a rebuilding team, you can't give up assets like that. I just feel like they got taken advantage of. The rest of their draft, really interesting. Obviously, I'm an Ashland guy. I like Adam Shaheen, regardless of that. But I was a fan of what they did. I thought that by taking him, that's where I had him valued personally. But it is still a risk. It's still a risk to take a guy from Ashland, a guy from North Carolina A&T, and a guy from Kutztown. You know, those are tiny schools. And Ashland has like 2,000 people there. North Carolina A&T, the competition level. I mean, Tarik Cohen is extremely explosive. He's really fun to watch on tape. He's 5'6", 179 pounds. Maybe he'll end up being good. I hope he does because he's really fun to watch. But chances are he won't be just because history tells us there's no one at that height that's ever been successful. Even a guy like Darren Sproles was a lot thicker and a lot bigger than Cohen was as far as his build. So I like Eddie Jackson pickup. I like the talent that they added. I'll say that. I'm just not sure that this is a draft class where you can afford to take three small school players, a backup quarterback, and a guy coming off a broken leg.
And it's funny you mentioned the possibility of Fox and Pace losing their jobs. I saw a tweet from Matt Miller. He had talked to, I guess, an NFL source or a scout somewhere. Basically said Ryan Pace got himself fired with this draft. So,
yikes. You know, that's a little strange to me to say that. But
yeah.
I guess it just depends, though. If you really didn't like Trubisky, then, you know, obviously you're not going to think well of it. So, but it is true. I will say this, though. It is true, though, because you pick your quarterback, and if the quarterback stinks, you get fired. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not really a bold statement. It just depends on what you think about Trubisky.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like it's confirmation bias at this point. So, but let's talk about San Francisco now because they really killed it. Obviously, the Solomon Thomas pick, dropping down one spot and picking up all those assets. Then they used some of that draft capital they picked up from Chicago. You know, I believe they used the fourth round pick they got from Chicago in that trade, sent that to Seattle to move up to 31 to take Reuben Foster, which talent-wise obviously is a steal. Off-field, we know what happened at the combine. But nonetheless, great pick at 31. Overall, I thought San Francisco got some good talent. George Kittle is a good tight end that they got in round 5. The only knock really I would have is trading up to get C.J. Beathard in round 3. When guys like Brad Kaya were still on the board and Nate Peterman and whatnot. That's the only knock I would have on San Francisco's draft. Otherwise, I thought John Lynch did quite well for his first draft as a general manager.
Yeah, I was really impressed with this, and we talked about this when Lynch got hired. You know, I'm excited to see what he does as a guy coming in from the media. But I tell you what, for all the people that say, hey, you know, that's why you're not a GM or that's why you're not in the league, this guy did pretty good for a guy with no front office experience before. You know, what he did in free agency I thought was impressive, getting depth on this team, adding some guys, maybe not big impact guys, but he added depth to it. We look in this draft class, I think he got a bunch of good players here. Solomon Thomas, great player. I think he could be a creative, huge upside, Pro Bowl type of talent at defensive end. They robbed the Bears of a couple mid-round picks. Reuben Foster, you know, at pick 31, he has a bunch of red flags. Concussion issues, stinger issues, surgery on shoulders, two of them, a second one probably coming. Well, first one already done, a second one possibly coming. You know, there are issues there. But with the 31st pick in the draft, they did get a big-time player. They probably did get a top 10 overall talent on the field in this class. And so the value there is worth it. If it doesn't work out, you can say, hey, our process was right. We understood the risks. But at that value, it was the right value. So definitely easy to say. Akella Witherspoon adds another body to their secondary, which they desperately needed. He's a developmental guy, and that's okay. It's a third round. It's gonna be like that. C.J. Beathard, I thought, was a huge reach. But it's a third-round pick. And they needed a backup quarterback. They didn't have a guy long-term as their backup. Matt Barkley, Brian Hoyer, they're journeymen. And it's okay. I wouldn't have taken Beathard here. I would have probably taken Brad Kaya because I think Kaya has a little bit more upside as a potential starter. But nonetheless, though, I understand why you would take him. Simply because if you're that comfortable with him as a backup, it's fine. It was like Cody Kessler last year. Joe Williams, George Kittle, huge fan of those guys. The rest of the draft may not matter. I'm not familiar with really the rest of the guys too much. I know Trent Taylor's a slot receiver, but I don't think he'll make the roster. But Williams and Kittle, they're both explosive players for their positions. And I think they're dark horses to make this roster for sure. And I'm really impressed with what they did. I agree with you. Like they stuck to their board. They added a bunch of offensive talent. On day 3 with Williams, Kittle, and then potentially Trent Taylor. And it's just a very impressive job by this team.
Let's talk about the Jets. Move down a little bit. By a lot of accounts, they once again got a pretty good value, even for having the 6th overall pick. We saw it a couple of years ago when they took Leonard Williams with that pick. Now we see it with them taking Jamal Adams, the stud safety out of LSU. Then they go and double up on safety, taking Marcus May in round 2. So you could really see that they're starting to... They were really wanting to attack their secondary. And they also took two corners late. Jeremy Clark of Michigan, Derek Jones of Mississippi. Then after they took the two safeties, they actually doubled up on receivers. Ardarius Stewart of Alabama in round 3, Chad Henson of Cal in round 4, and then they took Clemson's Jordan Leggett, in round 5. So, but certainly for a lot of people, one of the big takeaways was that they did not take a quarterback, so at least for this year, it could very well be, at some point, the Christian Hackenberg show. Yeah. At least they got guys to kind of surround Hackenberg. They, you know, at least grabbed a tight end, so maybe they can finally utilize a tight end, considering their leading tight end receiver, I think, only had like 10 catches last season. So it'll be interesting to see. And then with the safeties, you know, what's going on with Marcus Gilchrist, what's going on with Calvin Pryor. So a lot of questions to be answered with the Jets here.
Yeah, I totally agree here. I'm not sure exactly what happened here for the Jets. This was possibly a nail in the coffin for Todd Bowles, unless it, you know, Woody Johnson, the owner, kind of continues to lay off and give him a couple years, which I would like to see, but I am a little bit concerned how they lost the locker room late last year. This is a really weird draft for me. I mean, individually, I like some of the players that they got. Jamal Adams, nice player. He's going to be solid. I don't think you're going to have any issues with him in the next 10 years. I think he's going to be a very solid, above-average safety. But he's not a guy who really takes the ball away. He's not really a guy that plays deep on his own, single high, and produces. He did it at LSU, but doing it and producing in it are two different things. Adams didn't really produce in it. So to me, that's not automatically, that wouldn't be a top 10 pick in my book. He's safe, but he's not explosive. That's a concern. Marcus May, to double down. Now, I'm as low on Marcus May, so even if I'm looking at Marcus May as a high-end comparison, he's not as bad as Calvin Pryor, but he's probably Marcus Gilchrist, a guy they already have in the building. You know, he can play split safety, you know, and that's fine. A lot of safeties can play split safety. Keanu Neal, I thought, was a lot better, and I thought May looked better next to a better safety, and so maybe he'll do the same with Adams, where he doesn't have to be the main guy back there. But you know, these two are very similar builds. They're very similar styles. He's not, May isn't quite as good in man coverage at all. He's not bad in man coverage, but he's definitely not a guy that you're going to try to get into man coverage often. I just don't really see him being worth the, you know, 39th overall pick. I think I had him in the more like the fifth round. So to me, that's more of a late day two type of pick, into day three. I just think that you get safeties like him every year. I think there were better safeties that definitely went later than him too. I want more of a guy, that can be a little bit more explosive. It's the same thing as Adams. So that's a little bit of a concern there. And then they go two receivers, nice receivers. Our Darius Stewart, unique player. Chad Hansen, you know, upside type of guy. I'm just not sure about these picks, though. You know, you need help at linebacker, edge rusher, offensive line. You need more depth. Quarterback, as you mentioned. I don't understand it. I like Jordan Leggett in round five. Elijah McGuire, round six. That's a really nice pickup. I think he's going to be a nice sub-package player. But this is just a strange class for them, and I really think that they missed the boat on adding significant talent at other positions that, quite frankly, matter more. I'm a defensive backs guy, and I'll tell you this. If you're not getting special talent in the back end, you're wasting your picks. Stop gaps are just as good as these types of players. Not necessarily Adams. Adams is a good player, but I'm saying more like May, Marcus May. Look at Calvin Pryor. Like, there's not a huge difference between those types of players. Even if May is an average starter, it's just not a huge difference. There's not a lot of good impact safety. So just a strange strategy from them. I think, and to be honest, I think this is going to be the worst team in the NFL. I think, you know, this is going to be the team maybe with like the number one overall pick next year.
Not a bad, kind of hard to argue with that. I mean, this roster still looks kind of weak, so it'll be really interesting to kind of see how the Jets go about things and if Hackenberg is the quarterback, and if he is, buckle up. This is all I really have to say. But let's talk about another team that also found themselves kind of scooping up a nice safety with value pick, and I know he's a guy that you were pretty high on, if I'm not mistaken, and that's Malik Hooker to the Indianapolis Colts at number 15. So I guess just kind of start with Hooker, and then because I know you kind of like the Colts draft as well, so kind of run through them.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously they started off super strong with Malik Hooker. This would have been the guy I would have taken if I was the Jets. I've talked about him before, just a fantastic deep safety. They're going to be able to transform their secondary with him in it. And then adding Quincy Wilson, this is exactly what they needed too. A big press corner, physical guy at the line of scrimmage. He has good balance, and I know some people like him more at safety, but I tell you what, he's definitely a corner in my eyes. He's not a great turn-and-run guy. Like, he's not the fastest player. He's not the most fluid, but he's a big guy. You're not going to expect that from a lot of these big guys. The rare big guys who can do that go top 15. He's not quite that player, and that's okay. He's a little bit limited. He has to be a little bit better in the run game, but he has the mindset to succeed there. I think he'll be a very good number two corner along with Vontae Davis. And then, boom, you've got Clayton Gathers in the back end, and I'm a big fan of Clayton Gathers as well. This secondary got so much better just from the first two rounds of this draft, and I'm very impressed with what they did there. Got a pass rusher in Terrell Basham. That was a nice pick in round three. I think that was the right range for him. Zach Banner, honestly, I'm not a fan of that pick, but hey, it's a fourth round pick. I'm not going to be upset about it. Marlon Mack, Grover Stewart, and Anthony Walker Jr. These guys were huge values as to where I had them. Marlon Mack, my fifth ranked running back, ended up going as the 15th running back in this draft. Very reminiscent of what happened to me with Tevin Coleman. I thought Tevin Coleman was underdrafted a little bit with the Atlanta Falcons. What does he turn into? A high-efficiency backup with the Atlanta Falcons. I think the same thing can happen for Marlon Mack. Grover Stewart, I really like him as a nose tackle. He's a guy that needs to develop, but he's a really big body. He's a really good athlete in that big body. And then Anthony Walker, if he can lose a little weight, he's going to be a stud linebacker for them, whether it be as a special teams ace or potentially even a weak side starter. So I'm a really big fan of the value that the Colts got in this class, and I think that they've got at least two starters, definitely, with a potential of up to five or six starters in time.
I just kind of want to throw this question out at you two as kind of like a general sense. We just talked about two teams that took Florida defensive backs in round two. There was actually three Florida defensive backs that were taken in a span of about 15 picks in round two. Talk about Quincy Wilson to the Colts, Marcus May to the Jets, and then the Lions at 53 took Tease Tabor. So out of those three, how did you see those three guys coming in, and who do you think is kind of in the best situation out of those three?
So, you know, Tabor was a guy that I liked his film, but I definitely saw the concerns as far as the speed. He's very grabby, a little bit inconsistent, too. He's definitely not a cover corner. He's more like the explosive zone, explosive in terms of creating explosive plays. He's not an explosive athlete. So he's an instincts guy, and that's rough. And I was really surprised to see him go in the second round. I thought he should have gone late third round to fourth round because of his athleticism issues. Wilson I liked a little bit more. I had him in the second round, so I thought this was the perfect value. Talked about him a little bit. And I'm sorry, I missed the third guy?
The Marcus May.
Oh, Marcus May. Okay, yeah. May, yeah, like I said, I had him in the fifth round. So, yeah, I wasn't fans of Tabor or May, but Wilson I was a fan of.
So overall, you'd think Wilson's kind of in the best spot to succeed right now?
Yeah. Definitely based off of situations. Although I do think Tabor went to a good situation, and May is going to have the opportunities too. So, like, the advantage of being a higher round draft pick is that you're going to be fed the opportunities to succeed. Mm-hmm. And Tabor's going to be able to compete with Nathan Lawson in Detroit. I don't think he's better than Lawson, but Lawson doesn't have a long term contract either. So Tabor could possibly play in the slot, too. I think that he does have a skill set to possibly play in the slot a little bit. May is going to get the opportunities. He's going to probably start right away. I'm assuming that the Jets are going to move away from the other safeties on the roster, Pryor and Gilchrist, and then he'll get the opportunity to start. So they're all in good situations as far as to produce, just because they are day one, day two picks. Those guys are always going to get the opportunities, but I think in terms of talent, Wilson's just far away and ahead of the other ones.
Tampa Bay is another team that I thought did quite well, especially at the top of the draft. I mean, getting O.J. Howard at number 19, I thought was quite a steal. You know, I really thought O.J. Howard was going to be a top 15 pick. I came away from the Senior Bowl saying this guy's going top 15. Then I thought maybe he could go top 10. Actually, in my final mock, I had him going to the Jets at 6. Obviously, the Jets did go ahead and take a tight end. But, boy, for the Bucs to get him. And even when the Titans were on the clock at 18, I thought this would be a good spot for Howard. I thought maybe, you know, even with taking Corey Davis, I thought the Titans could potentially double up on the offensive weapons there, really grab Howard, but they went defense in the Dory Jackson. So Howard falls to Tampa at 19, and now all of a sudden you're looking at, on paper, a really good offense. You know, you've got Mike Evans on the outside to stretch the field. Howard's going to open things up on the inside. Could stretch the middle of the field as well. And then DeSean Jackson can kind of just go wherever he wants. Even Cameron Brate had a decent season last year catching the ball. And then running back, you know, you still have Doug Martin, although they did draft the running back in round 5, and Jeremy McNichols at Boise State. Also took Chris Godwin out of Penn State in round 3. Could be a nice receiver for them. And then looked in the secondary in round 2, and they took Justin Evans. But, I really think this is a team that's going to really start to compete. I think Jameis Winston has started to become in a position, you know, they're kind of taking a similar approach Tennessee was doing in building weapons for their quarterback. I think you're going to start to see Tampa really start to compete now in the NFC South, or at least for a wild card spot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm a fan of this draft. I think they need some offensive line help as well, but this wasn't the class to really do that. I think next year is going to be the class to do that. But just an insane amount of value to get O.J. Howard in the first round. That was totally unexpected. Chris Godwin in the third round. I think you probably could have switched Godwin and Evans as far as value for me, and I would have liked that a little bit better, but it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they got both of those guys. I think both of those guys are going to be big impact players for this offense. Like, I could for this team, Evans obviously at safety on defense, but he's a free safety. He's not a good tackler. He misses a lot of tackles, but it doesn't matter because he's a deep safety, great ball skills. I really like that. He's a good athlete. He's a guy I think he's going to be a starter pretty quickly. And Godwin with Howard, and you mentioned this, Howard and Evans, just unbelievable side. DeSean Jackson, like, that is crazy. Like, I don't know what defenses are going to do. And Jameis has definitely the weapons to get this done now. Jeremy McNichols, really nice value there in the fifth round. I thought he was a late day 2, early day 3 guy. I think he's going to be a really good value for that price. And, defensively, Kendall Beckwith, I didn't like that pick in the third round. You know, I thought he was a late round guy before the injury, but it's okay. You know, they took a risk on a guy that they liked. They wanted a big run stuffer. That's what he can do. And hey, he's cheap for 4 years. It's not a big deal if he doesn't work out, coming off an ACL injury. And then, Steve, Tua Tagovailoa. Yeah, he's an old prospect. Yeah, there you go. He's a rotational player. But in the seventh round, he's an old guy. He's going to be, I think, 27. I think when the season starts.
Yeah. Yep.
They're rolling the dice on it. It's not a big deal. But I like the draft, man. I don't know how you can't like their draft. They added a ton of talent of guys that I really didn't think would be there when those guys were there. I mean, I could basically say that for everyone except for Justin Evans and Kendall Beckwith. I didn't think these guys would be there, and they got them. So, hey, that's a great draft.
Yeah, for sure, man. And, now that I'm kind of starting to cover the Panthers and the Falcons over on the USA Today Wire sites, that was one of the things I was kind of thinking about, you know, when looking at these teams and seeing the draft Tampa had. I'm thinking, okay, how are Carolina and Atlanta going to defend this? How do you match up Evans, Jackson, Howard, even Doug Martin in the backfield? How are defenses going to approach this Tampa offense? How are they going to defend it? This has the makings of a really good offense in 2017. So I'll be really excited. I think, you know, you're looking at a division that's going to put up a lot of points, I think. I think when you get some of these division games, these could be shootouts. They really could. And I'm talking all four teams. So I think the fireworks are going to go off anytime two of these four teams get together.
So yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. It's going to be a blast to be watching that conference next year.
Mm-hmm. I just kind of want to make note too about the Chargers draft. We talked about Hooker falling to 15 at the Colts, which was tremendous value. I really thought Hooker would have been a good landing spot at 7 too for the Chargers, because they really need safety help. They did double up on safeties with Rayshon Jenkins of Miami and Desmond King of Iowa. And I know you and I certainly had our share of talking about Desmond King to fans over the last couple of days. But the part that I really want to make note of that I really liked was them getting Forrest Lamp in round two and Dan Feeney in round three. I think that's fantastic. I loved Lamp at the Senior Bowl. Feeney did well for himself, too. You know, he had the concussion issues, but you put those two on the line together, I think it's going to be really good. I just hope they kind of get that stability now on the offensive line, as I tweeted a couple times during the draft, because this was something the Chargers haven't had over the last couple of years for one reason or another, mostly due to injury. But if they can kind of get that line stabilized and be able to get Lamp and Feeney in there, you know, and you took Mike Williams in round one, you know, this is a team that, this is another team that clearly really focused on offense, and they know that the window's obviously closing with Phillip Rivers. So I think this is about making a last ditch effort to help Phillip Rivers before he inevitably rides off into the sunset.
Yeah, for sure. And just insane value on day two there to get Lamp and Feeney. These were my number one and number two guards in the class. To get them in the second and third rounds, just incredible. They're going to step in, I think, right away and just make a difference. You know, I think they may release Orlando Franklin and just go ahead and go with these rookies. I know I would. And I think that's the best way to go. Mike Williams, you know, it's a little bit questionable at the top. I would have probably gone with Malik Hooker, but I understand why they went with Williams. If you look at it in the long-term scope, they've had so many injury issues with that wide receiver core. I think that it's potentially telling that they may be looking at getting out of the Keenan Allen deal when they can. Maybe the Travis Benjamin deal after this coming season, they're able to get out of it. So then they can maybe build around Tyrell Williams and Dontrell Inman and Mike Williams and keep that a little bit cheaper than maybe what they currently have. So I think that I think overall they had a really good draft. You know, I don't love Rayshon Jenkins and Desmond King, but I like where they got them. Okay, I had these guys actually slotted in the same rounds that they went to. You know, and the thing with Desmond King is that people were asking, well, why, you know, this was a guy that was projected to be a first round pick. It's like, well, media analysts and the NFL are two different entities. Okay, and media analysts, especially with secondary players, get this wrong. You know, we all get things wrong. I get things wrong. You know, it is what it is. We just try to do the best we can. GMs get stuff wrong. This is the time of the off season where a lot of folks are like, well, you know, that's why you're not a GM or a scout. It's like, dude, all these teams miss. And this is their full-time career and they miss. So I'm sure you're going to miss. But, you know, King, I've been saying this for a couple of years. He is a good player. I would want him on my team, but not until day three of the draft. He's small. He's slow compared to NFL standards. And those don't bode well. There are very few guys that work out with the measurements that he has. Doesn't matter about the tape. A lot of teams took him off their board because of that. And rightfully so. The goal is to mitigate risk. Now, that being said, I think he will fit nicely at safety or in the slot. Outside of those two roles, he's not going to find success. It's just he's not going to be a physical corner because he can't turn and run. Now, the interesting part as opposed to that is going to be he's never played those two positions. So you look at why he fell to day three, you're completely changing his position. And he's not a guy with measurables. Rayshon Jenkins was a much better and bigger athlete, and he has 4 years of experience of playing safety. And that's why he went a full round ahead of him, even though he was a less impactful player in college. So, you know, you can't go too much off of accolades and awards. He was a great college player. Absolutely. No one's doubting that. But that doesn't mean he's going to be a good NFL pro. But I do think he's going to be a guy that sticks around for a good while.
I mean, look how many times the Heisman winner falls flat on their face in the NFL. So,
yep.
You know, there's your perfect example right there. I guess I should mention the Eagles a little bit. You know, we're not going to get into Miami because you can just listen to Ian and Oscar just talk for hours about the Miami draft. But we'll mention the Eagles real quick here. You know, Derek Barnett in round one, which I thought was a good pick. You know, they could use pass rush. Need someone opposite Brandon Graham. I really like the Sidney Jones pick. I really did. You know, when it came up to that pick, I'm thinking, hey, I'd be cool with Sidney Jones here. You know, yeah, he has the injury, but let's face it, without the injury, he's a top 15 pick.
Yep.
And they also went ahead and kind of covered their bases in the third round when they took Rasul Douglas of West Virginia. So this way now they have someone that can come in and play opposite Patrick Robinson while they wait for Sidney Jones to recover. And then down the line, probably next season or 2018, you're probably looking at Jones and Douglas as the starters. And then they took Matt Collins in round four, Donnell Pumphrey also in round four, another small running back, but I thought, at least at the Senior Bowl, I thought he held up well. Again, can he hold up to the beating in the NFL at just 5'8", 176, we'll see. Shelton Gibson is a guy a lot of people are saying is just straight speed. Nate Jerry, the safety end of Nebraska, and then Elijah Qualls, D tackle out of Washington. So Eagles did pretty well, I think, with this draft.
Yeah, I agree. I like this class. You know, Derek Barnett, I wasn't the highest person on, but I still like him. He's a very safe pick. Maybe he turns out to be better than what I expected. And if so, then this would be a great steal, pick 14. I think he's going to be a really solid guy who gets 7 to 10 sacks a year, guy that you definitely want on your team. And, you know, he doesn't have the huge upside, I don't think, athletically, than a guy like Myles Garrett, even though he had more production, and that's going to help him. You know, his experience is definitely going to help him. He's a refined player. I don't think he has to work on too much. I think he is just what he is a little bit, and that's okay. That's all right. It's not as much of a negative as maybe it sounds like. But you know, I am optimistic about his fit in Philly, and I like this. I like the Sidney Jones pick a lot. You know, we talked about him and the injuries, you know, that happened to him, and it's very unfortunate. But this is the right range to take him. I think round two, if he comes back 100%, absolute steal. Rasul Douglas, he is a long corner. It's exactly what they needed. He's going to compete with Jalen Mills, I think, for a starting job. I think he's similar to Jalen Mills, too, as far as his weaknesses. So he's not going to be a guy I think you want to play right away. But if he has to play, at least he fits what they want to do. And he's not a bad player. Like, I don't think he's a bad player. He's just a very scheme-limited player. Then they kind of went with some specialists on day three, and that's okay. Matt Collins, Donnell Pumphrey, Shelton Gibson, these guys will compete for roster spots. I was a little bit surprised with Pumphrey. I think they should have gone with a bigger back here. They've got small backs already on their roster. They don't have anybody they can just turn and hand it to 15 times a game, just to wear out the defense a little bit. Pumphrey's a good player. He's the all-time leading rusher in college football history. That number's a little bit tainted, as far as, you know, total games played. It was in his favor. But that's what, you know, that's not to take anything away from him, but, This just is what it is, but I'm just really surprised that they took him. I kind of wish they would have went in another direction here, but I do respect Pumphrey, and I think he's going to be really fun to watch. I hope he makes it. Gibson, great deep threat. Hollins, great deep threat. They're obviously looking for big plays on offense. Nate Jerry was a sneaky pickup. He's going to play linebacker, not safety, from Nebraska. He's a hard hitter. He's going to be a special teams guy. I'm interested to see how he sticks. He barely missed my draft guide cutoff, but I've been a fan of him for a couple years, and I like that pickup.
One more team we'll talk about, and then we'll kind of...
And Bill, you might be on mute, buddy.
Oh, yeah, I just had myself on mute. Whoops.
That's okay.
Yeah. It happens.
Yeah.
One more team we'll kind of talk about, and then kind of maybe like a last general sense of winners and stuff. We'll talk about the Panthers. I kind of ran through their picks over at the Panthers Wire, kind of recapping. Really liked what they did as well. You know, two really strong skill players in the first two rounds in Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel. They took my boy Taylor Moton at the end of round two.
I just think he's a bruiser in the run game, and I think playing in Carolina, where it's really run-focused, is kind of the perfect opportunity for him. Probably going to start at right guard. I think he can play left or right tackle eventually. And of course, the Panthers are also a team that just threw money at Matt Khalil, who performed so well in Minnesota. they took the other Texas A&M defensive end, Deshaun Hall. Corn Elder, the corner out of Miami, I thought was good. And then Alex Arma, fullback from West Virginia. Well, he's projected as a fullback from West Virginia, who someone I obviously had no idea who he was. And then they took a kicker in round 7, Harrison Butker of Georgia Tech. But overall, I thought the Panthers did fantastic. Really hitting on some needs and really getting some talent out there.
Yeah, I agree. This was another big draft class that I was a big fan of. When I look at their class, you obviously say that, hey, their focus was fixing this offense for Cam Newton. And we heard today, actually, that Kelvin Benjamin's actually another offensive tackle, actually, at 6'4", 280 pounds. So they're going to have to figure that out. That's a mess. That's why I actually wasn't a fan of Kelvin Benjamin out of college. He can have the occasional big game, and that catch radius is nice, but he is super inconsistent, and he needs a lot of targets to be effective, which is I don't like that type of inefficient player. But his size concerns is a huge issue for them, and I don't think that they're going to want to stick with him too much longer. I wouldn't be surprised if his days there are numbered, and especially when they go so heavy on offense in this draft. Curtis Samuel is a great deep threat. He's going to fit that Ted Ginn role as far as deep threat, but he's also better than Ted Ginn because he can line up in the slot. He can play a little bit of running back. I don't think you're going to see him at running back this year. They kind of talked about that after the draft, and it makes sense. There's no reason to put him at running back often, unless if you absolutely have to, because Christian McCaffrey's a great running back. Definitely a round one player. Number 8 seems a little high, but hey, he's really dynamic. He's a rare skill set. He's a workhorse player. In conjunction with Jonathan Stewart, he's going to be a beast there. And I think I just can't wait to watch this offense continue to improve, especially as they mature, get a little bit older. Taylor Moton, you talked about him. I think he's a perfect right tackle for them. I think he takes over that position probably in 2018. So I was a huge fan of him. I had him as an early round 2 pick, so I thought that value there in the late second round was good. Deshaun Hall. Corn Elder, these guys are going to get playing time, I think, early in their career. Hall's going to be a rotational rush end, and then Corn Elder, I think, might start at slot for them in the 5th round. That is awesome value. Mm-hmm. Just a great draft by Dave Gettleman. I thought that they just knocked this one out of the park.
Yes, they did. I agree. I think Elder in round 5 is fantastic, so I'll be excited to watch that. Any final thoughts overall of what you thought from the draft that we didn't touch on?
I don't think so. Just a great event this year. It was a deep class, and that reflected itself in that, a lot of our stuff, a lot of our comments were very positive. And that happens when it's a deep class. Teams, I thought, did a great job overall of maximizing the value that they got. I thought that the rounds, as far as where players went, I thought for the most part, very good job of valuing talent correctly. We didn't see too many guys that I thought would go very higher, fall too far. The Virginia Tech guys went a little bit lower than what I expected. Didn't expect to see Isaiah Ford, Bucky Hodges go late day 3, didn't expect to see Jared Evans go undrafted. So, I don't know what's going on there, whether it's character concerns or what. I'm not privy to that information, but I was just surprised because these were good players on the field. But overall, this was a really fun event, and next year's class, probably start looking at it later this summer, a little bit more in depth, working on some other things this summer. But, this was a really fun class to look at.
It really was. I mean, there was a lot of great talent still on the board come day 3 and even later on. Like I said, Bucky Hodges, I thought, was a pretty good tight end, and he doesn't get taken until pick, I think, 201, I think it was, by the Minnesota Vikings. So that just kind of showed you. And, I mean, Chad Kelly, a quarterback, was Mr. Irrelevant. And I think that, you know, that'll be something we could talk with Mark about as well, how interesting of a pick that was, that Denver took Chad Kelly with the final pick of the draft. So it just kind of goes to show you what kind of talent there was up and down the draft board from 1 all the way to 253. So, you know, I agree with you. It was definitely a fun event. But now, you know, the downside with the draft being over is we're certainly into kind of the dead period now where nothing's really going to happen until minicamps in June. And then after that, then it's really the dead period between the end of minicamp and the start of training camp. So, you know, this is kind of the time for some people to kind of get you can either get caught up or, you know, take a break. I know a lot of draft analysts like yourself certainly deserve a break at this point because, you know, it was a lot of hard work building up to this. Now it's over. You can relax and then later in the summer get back into it. So, you know, just want to say props to you, Ian, and all the other great analysts out there. You know, like the guys at NDT Scouting, you know, props to them for the live stream that they put on. God bless them for standing as long as they did in the same spot. I don't know if you saw that, but that was one of my first thoughts, that the three of them basically stood at their desk for like the entire draft. I'm thinking, how are they standing in one spot for that long and just keep going? But, you know, props to them. Kyle, Joe, John, fantastic job. John Ledyard, a friend of our show, he did some big things. Jeff Risden, banging things out. So a lot of guys out there just did fantastic work. So kudos to all of you. And just it was an awesome event, and I'm looking forward to getting ready for next NFL draft. But of course, we have an actual NFL season to get through first.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely, it's been a fun season. And I'm excited to talk with Mark here this week and get that out to you guys. Give folks that may have drafted a rookie quarterback, give them a little bit more in depth of what they're going to be expecting this season and over the next couple of years from their young quarterbacks.
Exactly. It's going to be. I'm really looking forward to it myself. When we got this show together and Mark said he's going to come on, it's like this is great. This is like a QB guru. It's going to be a fun time, so I'm really looking forward to it. So, you know, we're recording this on Sunday, the show we're doing now, the show with Mark will be doing on Tuesday, so hopefully a little bit after that we'll get these shows out to you, so really excited. So with that, I think we'll wrap things up. That was really fun.
For sure, man, for sure. The draft's always the best event. For me, it's my favorite event of the year, and yeah, it's always kind of sad when it's over, but it's also a new challenge as we start to look at these players over the next couple of years, kind of see where we were, see where we missed, see where we hit, and start looking towards the next class as well at the same time.
Absolutely, and of course, always a pleasure to have you here kind of helping me through this process, man, so I always appreciate it, bud.
It's my pleasure, man. It's my pleasure, and it's exciting that you got to handle your first draft. Over at the couple of wire accounts that you have, the Panthers wire and the Falcons wire, it's truly an experience for folks that haven't covered the draft in any form in that sort of sense. It's a challenge. It's a real challenge. It's a fun challenge, and it adds a new sense to the draft that maybe you're not familiar with. And it's something that I definitely recommend for anybody out there. In some form or fashion, whether you're doing it live streaming or whether you're doing it writing the picks in between and kind of giving an explanation, it's a challenge for sure.
Absolutely. And it's even kind of something I did during the first 2 days just on my own blog, just kind of posted a recap of all the picks. It was really fun to write about the draft. And, yeah, to be a part of the Falcons wire and the Panthers wire now is outstanding. You know, I'm very excited. So with that... Well, thank you guys as always for listening. It's always a fun time sharing this with you. Again, stay with us in a couple days. get ready for our talk with Mark Schofield, talking rookie quarterbacks. It's really going to be a fun time, so I hope you guys are ready to join on the ride for us. So for Ian Wharton, I'm Bill Rossetti. Thanks so much for listening, guys. And we'll see you next time right here on GG. Until then, take care, my friends.